Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and guests.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is episode number 102. I'm Paul Spain, and with me is...
Harley Ogier, reviews editor at New Zealand PC World Mag.
And Tim Hayward, I look after the handset range at 2 Degrees.
Great. Welcome along, guys. Now, there's been some interesting news in the tech world, as there is probably... Well, there always seems to be interesting things every week. First up, now, Tim, this... I don't know if you can comment too much on this one, but certainly something of interest to probably the rest of us is Telecom's announcement around roaming prices. Now, Harley, you saw this one too. It's quite a change to potentially the costs of travelling overseas with a if you're a Telecom customer with your mobile.
It is. Well, it's a fairly major change down to a flat rate rather than a ridiculous per megabyte.
Yeah, well, there's always been a challenge when you're a mobile user that travels outside of the country. You're no longer, I guess, under the plan that you're normally on, and there's always been big costs for making calls and for data when you're overseas, and this is something we've seen sort of slowly move down. But what we're seeing from Telecom is a fixed daily rate for a number of countries. Now, it doesn't cover all the countries, but Australia, I think, is $6 a day is sort of the flat rate. US, UK, Australia, and I think probably about 10 other countries off the top of my head are on a $10 a day sort of flat rate. And then after that, there are other sort of rates that apply, but even those rates have sort of come down dramatically from what we were used to in the past, by a factor of I think sort of
90%,
so sort of 90% reduction across what a lot of those rates were previously. Not much of a change in the actual calling rates, but certainly good to see those reductions. Interesting that for prepaid customers, there have been some changes, but we're still up for the big bucks that we're, used to with roaming data. And when we had a look, those are sort of between $1,000 and $8,000, if you were to look at it on a per gigabyte basis, which is probably not a fair way to look at, the amount of data that you might traditionally use when traveling, but some people will need to use that over a period of a trip.
As soon as you tether anything to your mobile, which a lot of people do now, though, you tether your laptop to your mobile, and you could easily download half a gig of Windows updates without even realizing it.
Well, I guess the lesson there that we'd probably put out is, hey, don't tether when you're roaming, and unless you're on a really really cool unlimited plan or something that's gonna handle it. Now, Tim, 2 Degrees, when you guys sort of came into the market here, I guess you come in as a sort of a smaller player. Probably harder for you guys to sign up some of these super competitive deals on an international basis. That's something you can sort of comment on. I mean, we'd notice 2 Degrees sort of you sort of set a benchmark in terms of pricing in the market that's been lower in virtually other aspect in every other aspect other than probably roaming. Would it be fair to say that's because you can control your rates locally, but you don't have as much control on an international basis?
Yeah, look, it's not an area I deal in closely, but I think you kind of have reciprocal arrangements with certain parties, so it's going to depend a little bit on traffic going both ways.
Right.
And I guess probably due to our customer base at the moment, we probably don't see as much roaming traffic, or don't generate as much as perhaps the other guys' customer bases might. Look, I know it's a challenging area, and our guys are working on it all the time. There are a lot of individual agreements that have to be signed, with multiple different parties.
Yeah, there's not just one sort of collective thing you sign up and say, yeah, we'll do it this way.
Not for a lot of places. I think there are a few hubs around that do take care of some really small partners, but in general, I think so there's a lot of legwork that goes on. So, you know, I guess what's exciting about Telecom's announcement is how simple, you know, the proposition is for customers. So,
well,
you know,
some of those countries anyway.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, I think that the lesson still applies. Be cautious when you're travelling. Make sure you know what the rates are. And of course, you know, Vodafone made their announcement going back probably a couple of months now, in terms of some really improved rates from them. And in fact, I used one of their bundles recently when I was in Australia. Now, in that case, I was only there for probably a day or a day and a half, and they had a $15 bundle, which probably would have lasted me a few days, so potentially could have been cheaper than what Vodafone were offering here. But it really depends on what your usage is when you're traveling. So, you know, I'm guessing at some stage 2Degrees will come out with another offering. We'll probably end up with three quite different offerings in the market, and you know, I think consumers and businesses will need to have a close look at what those are, you know, when people are traveling, to get a good handle on what's the appropriate way you should make use of data while you're roaming, right?
I guess customers have also got really used to finding other ways of doing it as well, haven't they? They've sort of had to over the last, you know, few years. So a lot of Wi-Fi activity, a lot of buying local SIM cards, that kind of thing, for people that are travelling.
That's true, and there are some advantages in doing that. You know, I still keep a US SIM card active so that I've got a local US number, and you know, I've always found in the US there's a lot of convenience in that, because certainly, you know, going back sort of 5 or 10 years, if you gave somebody in the US an international number, a lot of them wouldn't even be able to dial it, let alone know how to dial it, and they had no way to SMS outside of the US either. So you had to have a local number. Now, in recent years, that's improved, and you know, they do have the interconnection sort of set up, so you can SMS from US to the rest of the world and vice versa. But that wasn't the case for a long time, so... And you've done something similar, right, Harley? You tend to use a local SIM when you're in the US?
I keep a US SIM active just because, for exactly the reasons you say. I mean, even now, a lot of people do have trouble dialing international numbers, particularly if they're dialing from a landline where you can't, there's no plus key or anything. You can't type what you actually see, so you need to know the codes to dial, so...
Yeah, it's too hard for a lot of people because they don't do it right.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're used to dialing outside of the country because most people in the world are outside of New Zealand.
That's true, very true. Now, also in the telecom world, we've had the announcement in the last few days around Telecom's what they're calling their 4G trial. Now, this is something that they started talking about in the media, you know, some months ago. And this is their testing, I guess, of a 4G LTE network, which is what we know already exists in the US and with Telstra in Australia and with what's the UK operator, Tim, that's launched 4G recently?
Everything Everywhere.
Everything Everywhere. So there are a few of these networks already around the world, in Asia too, I think. But this is really just I'm not sure exactly what to call it, because the networks that they're testing aren't necessarily going to be what Telecom use when we expect our mobile networks to offer sort of commercial 4G services. But yeah, it's good to see them putting something out there, and it's going to be fun to have a little bit of a play with it. So we'll certainly report back once we know a little bit more about that. But it's I don't mind there being good fast networks to play with in New Zealand. But the coverage areas at the moment are going to be very, very limited. There's just specific pockets of you know, a few cities that are going to have it available. So we'll certainly get to where we need to get to try that out, and we'll talk a little bit about what we find. But
I guess for most of us, you know, at the moment, sort of, you know, HSPA Plus and dual carrier are the more relevant technologies probably for the next 12 months, I would hazard a guess. So, you know, those things are delivering, you know, pretty fair speeds.
Because we look at the speeds that they top out at are, you know, technically 42 megabits a second, but you know, we've certainly seen, in some of the speed tests that we've done, You know, it's quite common to get between 10 and 15. You know, megabits. Sometimes you'll get less than that, but still on a mobile device, that's pretty good.
It's not bad.
And in other cases, you know, people have been able to test those up to sort of 20 or 30 megabits as well. So, yeah, I think that's probably workable for most people at the moment. You know, it certainly is pretty strong compared with home ADSL internet connections. Harley, have you sort of, what's the fastest you've seen? Have you seen any super fast speeds, or not something you've played with too much?
Not something I've played with too much. Well, something I've played with a lot, but not something I've really paid that much attention to, because mobile speeds for me, most of what I'm doing on the mobile are things where you don't really notice the speed. I'm viewing documents or I'm browsing web pages. I'm very rarely streaming video on my mobile or anything that would actually
top out bandwidth. Yeah, I guess it comes down to tethering, doesn't it, if you're sort of tethering your device. And because we don't have unlimited data plans here in New Zealand, like, you know, we see in some of the other markets, although those are mostly, you know, dying out. There's not many of those left, you know, internationally. But, you know, there have been those sort of plans. And, yeah, if you could have that and you could tether all sorts of things with your mobile, then it would become quite useful. But yeah, not quite so relevant here. Any plans from 2 Degrees, Tim, to offer unlimited data with tethering options for every customer for $1 a month or anything?
Oh, look, I couldn't possibly comment on that.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, there'd be a few takers, but probably not very good from a business perspective for any carrier.
I guess we focus on good value in our broadband zones, so we have some pretty aggressive large, you know, data bundles in that space. And I've seen a few people, you know, talk about like our 12 gig, you know, bundle as being almost like using Wi-Fi, you know, having for, in a month you're going to
struggle. Yeah, how much is that 12 gig offering?
It's a good question.
150 or something. Yeah, like that.
Let me just go look it up for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can report back to us on that one. But yeah, I mean, it is good to see that there are bigger and bigger mobile data plans, you know, available. And the prices are certainly, you know, coming down. Now, for 2 Degrees, the way that you guys operate, you sort of have a roaming agreement with Vodafone for areas where you don't have your own networks. But which are the cities now that 2 Degrees have your own, what you're calling your mobile broadband zones, where you can buy these quite low cost, you know, data, you know, packages and get the full 3G speeds.
Well, look, that's rolled out to quite a number of locations now. I think we're probably in about, gosh, I think we'd be in at least 10, maybe more, you know, cities and towns. So that's expanding all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but all the major cities are sort of covered now, certainly the bigger ones, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's good, because initially it was just sort of Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch and Queenstown or something, right? But now, sure. Now it's kind of...
Oh, look, we're way past that now.
Yeah, now if you go to a major location, then it's likely there. I guess the smaller beach towns and things like that are probably going to be some of the ones that are not quite there yet, as people sort of head out over summer.
Yeah, look, that's right. But then remember, we've got, you know, all the mobile data that you get with your contract plans or your pay monthly plans is national, right? So that's going to work everywhere.
Right.
And those bundles are pretty big now. And of course, then you can share that data across multiple devices as well. So it's really just those broadband zone bundles you use on your dongle that are kind of focused on our, you know, areas of coverage.
Cool. All right. That's good. Now, Panasonic have a little announcement coming through, and they were to do a little event around this, but I'm not sure exactly when that's coming up.
It's been rescheduled to 2013, I believe.
Yeah.
It's going to be in the next couple of days, and I just got an email today saying it's been pushed out to early 2013 due to the busyness of the season.
And were you aware of what they were going to be talking about?
Vaguely, a smart TV app for the old, was it TradeMe?
For TradeMe, yeah. So, what I understand is that, and this is quite unusual. It's certainly in the local market. I mean, there are a few, local specific apps that we're seeing on the smart TVs. QuickFlix probably being, you know, the main one that's sort of now starting to roll out. But from what we know about this is there will be a Trade Me app, so you can, if you're a bit of a Trade Me addict, you can sit there and watch TV, and you'll have the TV picture shrunk down a little bit, so it's still there, you can hear what's going on, watch TV, but surrounding the surrounding what you're watching on TV will be the feeds and Trade Me information, so you can be buying and selling and so on whilst watching TV, which I thought is quite an interesting approach. What I'm not sure about is what the benefits of this are compared to, for instance, using your smartphone. But you know, I guess on the flip side, there's an audience that doesn't sit around and watch TV with a smartphone or a tablet. So this sort of caters to that audience that could use their TV to, you know, to do what a computer might do or a smartphone or tablet might do while still watching TV. What do you guys think? Would you use this, Harley? Is this your sort of thing? Are you a Trade Me fanatic?
Well, I was a Trade Me fanatic quite some time ago. I used to sell all of my old tech to buy new tech when people actually bought secondhand technology. But I don't even have a TV at home anymore, so smart TV is really not my thing. But I can see it being really valuable if you're doing something like looking for a flat on Trade Me, because you've got a big screen that more than one person can share. So I can see it being quite useful in that. Also, I suppose if you're one of those people who loves to swoop in at 12 seconds before the end of an auction and place a winning bid.
Right, you can keep a watch on what's happening.
Yeah, if you've got your smartphone on your knee, you might not be paying attention, but if it's right up there on the screen,
there's a little bit more chance you might not be so hooked into the the movie or TV program that's on, you might catch it. Yeah.
You've got a bit of a visual cue that, hey, this is the perfect time to jump in there and get something and make someone swear at you through the internet.
What about in your household, Tim? Are there any Trade Me addict?
Not a big thing for us, no, Paul. But you know, always wanting to get a new TV, of course. And if that's a good enough reason to justify it, that'd be great.
Well, I think all these little additions, event, you know, some of them are going to sway individuals. So I've got to have that TV because it's got that unique feature. And I guess when we start talking a little bit more about smartphones and tablets and things a little bit later, I think we quickly find that there are particular unique little things that everyone sort of will find give them a preference for one platform or one device or another. And this may just be one of those things for the Panasonic TV for a bunch of people out there. So,
I think TVs are still. It's interesting, isn't it? Where you put your smarts for your TV, right? In the TV or in something connected to the TV, and how open is a TV platform? And I think that's all probably still not quite where most people would like it to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, from my preference, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. You know, my preference is to have a little bit like my computer monitor, is to have a fairly dumb TV and have the smarts in another device like an Xbox that can keep getting updated. And I've probably got a home full of Xboxes now, and they're attached to every TV or projector, etc., in the house. And you know, the convenience of that is that things can follow you around, and the Xbox, which the first one, I think the first Xbox 360 is probably about 6 or 7 years old now. But that even that original model still keeps getting the upgrades. So what a brand new Xbox today will do, one of those old school Xboxes, if it hasn't died with the blue ring of death, with the
red ring of death,
those early ones did, will still be able to actually do all these fancy new things. So there's definitely some benefits. Whereas with a TV, you might get, a little bit of upgrades, but it's not really a very powerful box. So that's certainly my opinion, is to take the smarts outside of the TV. But maybe my opinion on that will change in time if the TVs get better at how they do this and maybe get a little bit more flexible and upgradable.
My thoughts are very much the same as yours, that I like my TV, or if I'm using a TV, I like it to be the dumbest screen possible that's very good at being a screen. And to be a screen that lets you connect as many things to it as possible, wired and wirelessly, and then let devices do their own thing with that screen.
Yeah, no, agreed.
All right, now talking of wirelessly, Harley, we were chatting earlier about WiDi, which is also known as Intel Wireless Display, as you reminded me. Now, I shared on the podcast recently about some experiences I'd had with WiDi and initially how it worked well, but that I'd had some issues between my Windows 8 laptop my Windows 8 device and the WiDi based Netgear device that's plugged into my TV. For those that haven't caught that, WiDi or Intel Wireless Display is a technology that allows you to link up a device such as a laptop, a tablet, a smartphone to a TV or a projector. There are some TVs that already have this technology built in, but at the moment we're mostly using boxes from the likes of Netgear that plug into the TV and light up that type of functionality. Now, I'd had some bad experiences, but Harley, you were saying you've tried this across quite a range of laptops, non-Windows 8, and it had been very very seamless and successful for you.
I've tried it across at least 5 laptops, probably a couple more than that, and all using the exact same little Netgear adapter that you've got. I think that's really the only adapter.
The PTV 2000.
That's the only one that's really around in New Zealand. At Intel's developer forum this year, actually, I saw the next generation of adapters coming up are really USB stick-shaped things that you can just hang off the back of your TV out of a HDMI port, and they don't even need a little box. It's just like more like a stick.
That's great.
But, you're using the exact same adapter that you have and quite a range of, again, all Windows 7 laptops.
Right, so it may well be really an issue with the initial version of the software for Windows 8 in that case.
It could well be. Yeah. I had a few issues setting up in the very first place, but I found that after a couple of updates to the WiDi software, it ran fine.
Okay.
And when I first started using it, I found it really good for things like presentations and web browsing. Video was very choppy, and you could never hope to, say, game off it. But again, at Intel's developer event this year, I saw their latest range of CPUs that were codenamed Ivy Bridge. The WiDi running on those with the latest version of their WiDi software is actually good enough to play games and 1080p video over. They had Portal running on screen completely wirelessly.
Yeah,
so you could stand there with a wireless really Xbox controller, see the game, see the laptop in front of you, and then see it not connected to a TV, and you're watching 1080p, you know, big screen TV playing your game.
Yeah, and I think that's been my experience with the new Ultrabook here is that, you know, once it's connected, it's really responsive. It does work really well.
And
you can do full HD.
And it's got quite a range as well. I mean, I was getting about 5-10 meters out of it, no trouble, which is quite impressive for the amount of data that it's transferring to get a really good picture fluidly.
And the audio as well.
And so, the audio, true. The audio as well is...
Yeah. Oh, it's good. When we get to talking about the Nexus 4 a little bit later, we'll talk about our experience with the Nexus 4 and WiDi, but we'll come back to that one. Now, we've given Telecom a little bit of kudos for some of their 4G trial and their roaming announcement this week, but they've been in the media for not such good reasons a couple of times actually over the last few days. They've had some pretty widespread internet outages. I don't know if either of you guys use their use Telecom ADSL at home.
I'm on Vodafone, actually.
Okay. So none of us have experienced it, the outage that I hear, the major one this week, went out sometime after 1 a.m. and they were out for about 7 hours until they brought a lot of their network back up, which is a reasonably big outage in the scheme of things these days. I guess if you look back a few years, in the early days of ADSL and internet, we sort of got quite used to there being outages. But these days, we don't actually get that many. So when there is one, it's kind of big news, and people are so reliant on these things. And a lot of retailers rely on ADSL for running their FPOS, today, rather than the sort of the dial up where you have to wait for it to dial and go through. It does it online over an internet connection, which is much quicker. All sorts of frustrations, I'm sure, for lots of people around the country. But the good thing was they got it nailed, reasonably early in the day. But since it started so early, it's a pity they didn't. It took quite a long time for them to really address it.
Yeah, one of my colleagues did tell me that his internet went out at about 1 a.m. So I suspect he must have been on there. network.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a congestion problem, is it? Presumably something else was going on.
Well, in this case, I think there was some sort of an upgrade that went on. There was word maybe it was a Chorus related issue, so maybe out of Telecom's hands. I'm not sure. I certainly didn't have an issue. You know, in my case, and like how my home connection is with Vodafone. So yeah. All right, now chit-chatting about other sort of news and announcements. Last week, of course, we were talking about the Galaxy Note 2, which we expected to be launched last week, and indeed it was by, I think, 2 degrees. You guys launched it first up there, Tim?
I think we did.
Yeah.
I think the official launch day was the 6th, I think, we might have sneaked out a day earlier than that, I think.
Oh, good on you.
One of our partners, shall we say it that way.
Okay,
put it
okay.
That way.
Well, the interesting thing that surprised me around that launch was we had heard of a launch price of $1,199 for the Note 2, and the prices that we're sort of seeing online, just looking at the Vodafone price before, was $1,099, and we see that 2 degrees have slipped in a little bit cheaper at $1,049. So yeah, considering you know, the nature of the Note 2, it's pretty powerful and massive sort of you know, device that sort of sits between your traditional smartphone and your tablet. I think that's pretty reasonable pricing. What's your thought, Harley?
I think that's a pretty reasonable price. I mean, what is it? 5.5-inch screen at full 720p. So you're talking about something that is really. It's almost sort of a 7-inch tablet spec, just shrunk a little further.
Yeah.
So
well, the funny thing is, if it were a tablet, it would probably be priced cheaper. The strange thing in the current world is that we pay more for smartphones than we do for tablets, which one day somebody will explain to me. I haven't quite got my head around that yet. Maybe Tim, you can explain that.
Look, I can't. No. I don't know. I mean, again, same thing. We had, you know, the tablets we've done have always been really for an equivalent spec, you know, pretty good price when you compare them to the high-end
smartphones. Yeah.
And is miniaturization an issue there, though? Because you think of smaller things should be cheaper, but smaller things with the same kind of spec need to be, well, smaller. Miniaturization of something that, you know, trying to get a gaming PC into something the size of a Matchbox would be very difficult, and it would probably cost a lot more. So trying to get the spec of a 7-inch tablet into a 5.5-inch smartphone, I mean, maybe there is additional cost there. I'm being generous, but...
I think you're being far too generous. I think these components are small, whatever they're in, and the tablets use the same small components but big batteries. But which is probably, again, another reason why a tablet should be more expensive, because it's got a bigger battery and a bigger screen.
True.
But yeah, and interesting. So maybe, I think we're looking at it realistically. It's smartphones is where the money's being made. There's a lot of them sold. You know, maybe there's a few more sort of layers in terms of, you know, getting to market and so on. Not sure. So anyway, the Galaxy Note 2, so that's out now, and as we say, yeah, $1,049 or $1,099 is what Vodafone have launched it at. I think Telecom are probably doing the same price as Vodafone. Now there's one other handset. Tim, tell us about the Google Nexus 4. Now this is a handset which, there's been a few Nexus products from Google. Maybe you can give us sort of your take on how these products sort of fit in and how Google are releasing them with the different manufacturers and so on involved.
Well, these are the official Google devices, right? So these are your flagship, you know, devices, and they tend to release one every time there's a new version or a significant new version of Android. I guess in some ways, actually, this version of Android isn't that big a difference. Still called Jelly Bean, of course, 4.2. But, you know, they've now got a lineup of three devices. So they've got the Nexus 4. I presume the 4 is because it's the fourth one rather than the 4-inch screen. And then they've got the Nexus 7, which is about the 7-inch screen, and the Nexus 10. So, you know, look, as most, I'm sure most of the listeners know, those are all sold directly overseas by Google online on the Play Store.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting approach, isn't it? That Google is selling these, you know, direct, you know, bypassing all the usual channels when you're in those particular markets, which New Zealand isn't included. I guess this is similar to what Microsoft are doing with their Surface devices. You can only, certainly at this stage, buy them with those direct channels in those markets, right?
Well, it tends to be, I think from what I can understand, it's the markets that have got the full suite of Google services, especially the content, right? Media stuff, if you're consuming media on these devices. So, you know, the books, the movies, the TV shows in the US, and the music. You know, I mean, the music service actually sounds great, and I'd love to be able to use it, you know, upload your whole library and stream it anywhere and buy new tracks and it matches your existing library, so you don't have to upload those if it's already got copies. So that all sounds fantastic, but you know, those services aren't available here, and it seems that if those services aren't available, then you know, they won't sell the devices directly.
Actually, thinking about it, in the US you can buy some of these products at retail. So for instance, the Nexus 7 tablet that I picked up in the US, there was going to be a big wait if I ordered it online, but I was able to find a retailer that happened to have some stock that they hadn't made available to anyone, and I walked in and tapped them on the shoulder at the right moment and managed to get one. But that was selling at the same sort of at that same sort of price point, which is interesting.
Yeah,
because they do sell the devices very, very cheaply.
Mm, I don't think that's the case in Australia, from what I understand. So they've just gone on sale in Australia, and I haven't. I'm not that close, but I don't think, and I certainly haven't seen coverage of retailers over there selling the whole range, you know, at the same price as what you can get it on the Play Store.
Okay, so the Nexus 4, 2Degrees, you're the only carrier that's launched this in the New Zealand market at this stage?
Yeah, we certainly are. We were always excited to bring in the flagship Android device. I think, in the past there's been sort of some criticism of the Nexus range not being, you know, as nice a finished as some of the devices available on the market, but I think this one has got a nice build quality, and you know, it certainly feels like a premium device. When you're holding it with the glass back, it's always good for us to have a point of difference and be offering something that we think, you know, people are going to really want to enjoy. And I guess, you know, the promise of the whole Nexus range, right, is you've always got the latest version, or you're going to be the first to get the new version of Android software when it comes out.
So to clarify on that, the Nexus 4 that 2Degrees have launched in New Zealand just comes with a stock standard Android build from Google, and when Google releases an update, there's nothing in the mix there like there is with products from other vendors, where you guys will have to go through a process. They'll push it out like Apple pushes out an update to an iPhone or iOS. Is that effectively
how
it works?
That's absolutely the case. There is nothing, you know, 2Degrees-ized about this device, right? There's no custom software. It's the same software as on everyone.
So if there's something that they've stuffed up, then you guys have to live with it. But as long as they've done a good job of it, then it's good for everyone.
Yeah, look, that's right. And I mean, obviously, they've got to take that into account on their side, right? So their testing process must be pretty thorough. They've got, you know, they've partnered with LG, so LG have got resource all around the world who are going to be doing testing on their behalf as well, I'm sure. So, but you're right, there's a piece of work on their side to make sure that it's, very compatible with all the different networks it's going to be running on. And I guess the way they manage that, of course, and one of the comments you've heard about this device is it doesn't have LTE. So,
which isn't too relevant in the New Zealand market, is it? So, not something we need to worry about, but it's one of the talking points in the US, right?
It's definitely, there's been, you know, if there's been any criticism around this device at all out of the US, it's mostly been around that.
Yeah.
That's because I don't think it's possible at this time to have a standardized LTE, capability on a device without having a lot of testing and involvement from the carriers. So, that probably speaks to, I guess, LTE's maturity at this stage.
Yeah, well, 4G, you know, networks, which LTE is, are just not that, you know, common broadly yet. Now, when I looked at it, one thing was the sort of some of the curves and shape to it actually reminded me of a handset from about 2 years ago called the, or maybe 3 years ago or more, called the Motorola Q. I don't know if either of you used it, but it was very similar, except that the lower half of where this has got the screen, had a keyboard on it, but very similar sort of styling and shaping. So it was quite quite interesting to see some quite similar sort of ways that it shaped on the back and so on to that. But overall, really nice handset. I did have some issues with getting the ActiveSync working to my business or to an Office 365 email account. But I noticed, when we talked about it, Tim, you had no such dramas, except that you were forced to encrypt the whole device, which means you had to have it fully charged and the power plugged in. Is that right?
Well, that's right. I think that's the default. You know, the default setup is as soon as you're setting up an Exchange account, you've got to encrypt. The device is going to go through an encryption phase, and it only does that once. Yeah, fully charged with the charger plugged in. 3/4 wasn't good enough.
Yep. There are a couple of things the Android 4.2 is, each build of Android just adds a little bit of, a few little niceties. There are a couple of things I liked. One is when you power it off, it shuts down like an old school sort of TV screen, and if anyone remembers that, the image would shrink down to a little bar and then sort of disappear as the power went out, and it does that. I think you can, on a jailbroken iPhone, you can do something similar, but it just, the little things like that are nice, just nice little touches that they're now caring about. The little elements of the experience, which when Android was sort of new in its earlier releases, it was pretty rough around the edges. But now we're getting to that point where they're able to start doing those nice little, visual adjustments and so on.
Yeah, they seem to have taken charge, I guess, and ownership over what that user experience is like, especially pushing out their own range of devices. The first Nexus I've used, and it's it's just very uncluttered, it's fast, quite simple to use. I like it a lot.
Now, in terms of the other thing that I quite like with this build that I don't think was in the stock sort of builds of Android previously is when a call's coming in, you can accept it, reject it, or send an automated text message response. I wasn't entirely happy with the pre-done ones, but I used that yesterday. Somebody called me and I was in a meeting, and I pushed out one of the standard responses of "I'm busy, call me later" or something like that, which wasn't quite as polite as what I would have probably put, but it did the job. And so yeah, there are definitely a few of those little just small tweaks and improvements in there. In fact, I noticed something out today about one of the first updates for Windows Phone 8. That apparently started rolling out to some of the 8, maybe the 8X, HTC 8X phones internationally, is that it has that similar option on it. So maybe the Windows Phone platform is starting to move a little bit quicker, although that's something that Windows Phone or Windows Mobile had going back 3 or 4 years, was a similar feature, miss a call and send a text message, but they're including that in some of those new builds. So anyway, good to see that coming through. Good on you guys at 2 Degrees to bring something through that's a little bit different to what others are doing in the market. Now, on that front, Tim, wanted to hear from you a little bit about, because yours is sort of a unique role, really. There's only probably two other people like you within the industry in New Zealand, and we certainly don't get to sit down and have a chat very often. Your role as the handset guy at 2 Degrees is I think quite a fascinating one for a lot of us that are interested in smartphones and in the new technology that's coming through. And I think we'd be interested to hear a little bit about what is the process that you go through in terms of looking at devices. How much ahead of the rest of us are you hearing about these new things that are coming through and have to sort of keep under wraps before they get to market and so on? Can you fill us in a little bit about that and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Look, so
without giving away too many. Well, no, actually, you can give away as many secrets as you like. We won't complain, will we, Harley?
Not at all.
No.
Look, I guess as a role, it I suppose sits kind of halfway between our marketing and our sales teams, right? I sit in marketing, and that's because You know, ideally, everything we're doing is led by, you know, some marketing insights and some understanding of what our customers want. So, you know, ultimately, our handset range is reflecting the activities that we're trying to do around, say, prepay or around, you know, contract customers or around business customers. So, you know, you want to have a balanced range that fits all those different groups. And then also that fits our channels, right? That provides our channels with, you know, devices that they're going to do well with and sell lots of, ideally, and make some margin on that keeps their business ticking over. So it's kind of across those drivers, and then you've got the vendors. So, you know, they're coming and doing their roadmap presentations, and we're then, you know, taking those and going, well, these things fit in, you know, to what we're trying to do. In the next typically 6 to 9 months, you know, kind of lead time that you're looking out.
Right. So when the media often is talking about a new handset, we're often well behind that. So you've really got some insights into what's coming through from, I don't know, I'll pick some names, the Samsungs and the Nokias and so on, really well ahead of there being any mention in the media at all. You're talking to them and getting a handle on what's coming through, and, you know, potentially, you know, signing up to take some of those handsets.
Yeah, look, often, although that gap is shrinking, you know, surprisingly. So, you know, the time frame within which we're getting to make our decisions is shrinking, and, you know, the amount of information that's becoming available, or at least the rumours that are beginning, or the kind of guesses that people are making, are all starting to happen. Much closer to the same timing that we're, you know, thinking about making decisions on. But, yeah, in general, you know, we've got a, you know, little bit of advance notice, as I guess anybody who's a buyer gets to have. And sometimes it's shorter and sometimes it's longer. I guess the challenge with the long ones can be that things change between the time when you make a call or you decide you want to arrange something.
The market changes, or the products even can change in that time.
Yeah. You know, the price points that might have been looked attractive, you know, might change. Other devices might come available in a shorter time frame. So, you know, you've got to be a bit flexible around the edges and be able to kind of, you know, bring things in that you might not have otherwise, and the Nexus 4 in some ways fits into that space. You know, it was a kind of a project that obviously is Google-led, so, you know, it didn't go through the normal selection process that you'd expect.
Right, because it's an LG brand, co-branded sort of device, and actually built by LG.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
And
your relationships with LG, I guess, rather than Google, right? Google don't sort of...
That's right, no. Yeah. You know, and we had to wait, I guess, and make sure that Google wasn't doing it themselves directly before it was worth us taking a look and thinking whether we could do it or not.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I don't think we sort of fully dived into the discussion around, pricing of that particular handset. So what we know is it's sold in the US at a pretty low figure, isn't it? Is it
so $349 US?
Yeah,
isn't it?
For that particular 16 gig model.
And $399 across the ditch in Australia.
In Australia, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the price that Google are selling it direct at.
Correct.
So when we, and I guess this is the question that, you know, that a few people have asked is, you know, why do we pay so much more here in New Zealand? Can you sort of fill us in on how that works?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think there's just a couple of pretty key reasons, and none of them are any great mystery. And if you have a look around, you know, some of the sites, you'll see some discussion around it. But really, effectively, I think the first thing is that Google is buying a lot of them, right? They're going to be placing single orders with LG for large numbers of these units, and you can tell by the global demand and how quickly it sold out, especially when it launched. I think it looks like supply is coming through a bit better at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looks as though that Google are selling these pretty much at a cost point, or at a cost price, just so that they can, you know, get their product into the market.
That's right, and then there's been some, you know, suggestions that, you know, maybe they even slightly discount it based on,
make a loss,
you know, the media services.
On the hardware and so on, because they'll make it up elsewhere on selling other services.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
And then I guess the third key factor is that you know, we've got some handling costs, which are relatively minor, but then there's channel margin, right? So we're, you know, we're selling this through our
retail
partners. You know, they've got to make some margin on selling this product. So that's, you know, that's where you get to. And it's, you know, when you do the stack, it's pretty easy to see how, you know,
how it adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think really the more logical comparison is to say, well, what else is on the market, you know, at a similar price point, you know, in that spec. And when you look at it that way, you know, it's a pretty reasonable price. You're seeing the S3 around for $799 on some retailers at the moment.
Yeah.
So,
and I guess, you know, if people want to, they can still bring one of those in from offshore, if, you know, if they choose to do so.
Yep.
You know, they're just, you know, they're going to be sort of limitations around warranties and, you know, and, you know, other associated challenges, but probably warranties the main one if something happens to a product and you've bought it offshore. And I've certainly been caught with that, because from a reviewing perspective, we can't get hold of everything. So sometimes we'll bring things in to have a look, and it's not unusual for those products to have some sort of issue. Then you're kind of left high and dry, right? So there's some advantages of buying locally.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess you haven't had a chance to go into a store and have a play with it, you know, when you're doing that. Although, obviously, a lot of the people buying it early, you know, they know what they're getting. And, you know, we'll also do it we'll do it for business customers on a good plan as well.
Subsidised.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. Yep, no, that's good. I mean, I think, as you say, most of that is generally known info, but it's good just to... to review that, because you know, sometimes it, you know, it doesn't add up to everyone.
You saw the warehouse yesterday do a bit of a special on it at $699. So I think they sold out twice, I think, during the day.
Yeah. No, and you know, I think that's the flip side. We'll get a retail price listed, and then you know certain retailers will come in with some pretty sharp discounts. In fact, I think if I look back the last, Christmas or two, you know, Boxing Day sales, we've seen, some of the reasonably large retailers offer, you know, 20% off right across every handset that they've got. So you can imagine, you know, an $800 handset could be $640 on Boxing Day potentially. So, that makes some of these devices pretty sharp, even comparing international rates. So yeah, not that we can always wait that long when it's an exciting new gadget, right?
Indeed.
Good. Now, anything else that sort of stood out for you on the Nexus 4? You've certainly, I've only just had it for a few days. Anything for you that sort of particularly sort of jumped out at you? Now, one limitation is that it doesn't have expandable storage, does it, compared to some of the other devices?
Yeah, that's true. So it comes with 16 gig
built-in. Which is becoming more and more common, isn't it? We're seeing a lot of devices that are just, you know, they've got a fixed storage, and if you want access to more stuff, you're pulling it down.
Well, and everything's backing up online, right? Mm. So as soon as you log in with your Gmail ID, you know, all your photos, all your videos and things are, you know, going to get backed up.
And that backup side of it, I've noticed the, you know, when we look at Windows Phone 8 and Android now, just, you know, each iteration gets slightly better with what it does in terms of its online, you know, backup. There's stuff that each platform doesn't back up, and there are things that each platform does back up. I guess iOS seems to be the most sort of robust in being able to do sort of a full device backup. But yeah, one of the things I noticed is Windows Phone 8 now, you know, will like Windows 8 does, can back up your kind of your various other accounts that are sort of linked in, your Exchange email accounts and things like that, and you recover the device, and it's just it'll prompt you for the passwords and so on, but it'll reset those up. But I don't think Google's doing that yet with Android, are they? But they're backing up all your apps and
your content,
Reloading them and so on, right?
Yeah, but not quite down to the same level, I don't think, with settings and Wi-Fi setups and things like that.
Now, jumping on to a few other devices, so we've got the Nokia Lumia 820 that's coming from Vodafone this Friday, and that's got a lot of similarities to the Lumia 920. Which Telecom launched, but the 820 comes in at $799, I think, is a price point that we've seen so far. So that's an interesting one. Does have a lower resolution screen, so much lower lower res. We're talking 480 by 800 pixels, or 480p versus 720p. So it's a fair chunk lower, but it still looks like a nice handset. We'll share a little bit more on that once we've had hands on. The other handset we have talked about in that Windows Phone 8 sort of side of things is the HTC 8X, which is appearing on HTC's New Zealand website, but we haven't been able to confirm from anyone at HTC or any of the carriers when and how that's going to become available in New Zealand. I'm looking at Tim, but there's no nod, so I'm guessing 2Degrees don't have anything up their sleeves. Tim, your Windows Phone 8, the product that you guys are doing is the Samsung
the 8 of S.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's been delayed, as far as we know. We don't have an actual. Well, we haven't. There hasn't been a launch date announced for that yet, has there?
No, there hasn't. No, so it has. You know, unfortunately, slipped a bit from was going to be beginning of December. So, look, I think we're, you know, looking forward to it coming. It's a great spec, really kind of an S3 running Windows phone. Mm. Look, it's a really nice device. So, you know, we're working closely with Samsung and hope to get that out as soon as we can in the new year, because I think it is going to really add to the range of devices out there, and I think it'll be a pretty good price.
Yeah, no, it looks like a really nice device. It was well priced. I think it was announced at $799, which I think is pretty sharp, and it's got expandable storage and 4.8-inch screen and so on. So pretty good one. Another little device or gadget, well, not so little actually, that we played with recently was the 2013 Ford Focus Sport. Now, we finally got our little sort of video review of the technology in that online, where we had a play with Ford Sync technology, which some of you may remember that we talked about going back probably 18 months. We had a play with that in the US. That's finally launched into the New Zealand market in the new Ford Focus S or Ford Focus Sport. So we had a bit of a play around with that. So you can check out the video. We'll have a link and details of that up on the nztechpodcast.com website very, very soon. Now, last week we had a bit of a chat around what was going on with QuickFlix and Freeview and Igloo. We didn't really get a chance to give some of that content justice. So next week we're going to be diving in with a bit more content. And we've invited the GMs of a couple of those companies to join us here on the NZ Tech Podcast. So we'll be able to, I guess, fill in a little bit more detail around what's happening as far as TV and broadcasts and the like in the New Zealand market. So that should be a bit of fun. Now, last couple of gadgets that we wanted to discuss, ones that have been out in the market now for a little while, but ones that we've spent a bit of time playing with. Now, Harley, we were chatting earlier about the iPad Mini, which seems to be your tablet of choice at the moment. Tell us about that.
Indeed. Well, it's my first iOS device ever, actually. So it's I've never had an iPhone or never had an iPad or used one for more than an hour at a time. So I was looking for some kind of iOS device to review apps and things on. It seems that if you don't have an iOS device, there are so many things that you can never try, because the default platform is iOS whenever someone puts out an app.
And, yeah, most things will come out for iPhone or iPad before.
Exactly, yeah. And Android 6 months later, maybe. And my phone platform of choice is Windows Phone, so usually apps just don't come out for me on the phone. But so I thought I'd pick up an iPad too. And then the Mini was announced, and ended up getting that instead, mostly based on price and the fact that the Mini is the iPad 2, but in a 7-inch size instead of 10. It's same processor, same screen resolution, so apps appear exactly as they would on the iPad 2. There's no, you know, recoding required like there is for the iPad Retina. And it's a wonderful little tablet. I've been having a great time with it. And it's, again, it is almost identical to the iPad 2, except it uses the new Lightning connector, which is found on the new iPhones and the latest iPad Retina as well. And it's the first iPad ever, or first iOS device, I believe, to have stereo speakers.
Yeah, that was something that maybe wasn't sort of obvious from the get-go, right?
No, it's hilarious, though, because the stereo speakers are both on the bottom of the device, at the left and right of the bottom. But if you're watching a movie or any kind of video where stereo sound might be, you know, important, you're going to have the device in landscape, which means that both of the stereo speakers are on the left-hand side, which makes for a rather interesting noise.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, really, isn't it?
But
I had similar experiences with the iPad Mini. For me, it was a bit of a surprise, but I really like it. It's sort of my favorite, probably device, certainly out of in the iPad range. And yeah, I got used to using sort of bigger tablets, but then this year I've played with a few 7-inch tablets. But I find that the form factor of it is really nice. It works really well. Now, I guess one of the flip sides with buying the iPad is that all your chargers and your other bits and pieces didn't work.
That's true.
Yeah. Haven't had any problems with that?
Well,
there's not a whole lot you need to plug in. You just need one charger and you're
exactly
away. Because it lasts for a long time, right? It's not
it
quite
does.
Like a smartphone where you... Maybe or a laptop where you need to have a few chargers scattered around the place.
Well, I use it very heavily. I would probably be using it with the screen on and actually inputting things probably for about 4 hours a day at least. And wow. I get 2 days out of it, so eight hours battery life, which is about what it advertises. So and often I'll get more than 2 days. I'll get 2 days and I'll charge it halfway through the third or something. But so I just always charge it at home. If I'm going to be using it all day at work, a couple of times I have been. When I first got it, I was using it to write a lot on just to see if I could. And I kept the charger with me then, ended up never plugging it in anyway.
Right, okay.
So, but it is a standard USB charger. It's just the actual plug on the device. So you don't even need to carry around the charger. You just need to carry around the cable, as long as you have a USB charger for another tablet or smartphone.
Yep. Okay, cool. And the other device, the iPad Mini definitely, I think, gets the thumbs up from both of us. The other device is the Microsoft Surface RT, which we were playing around with a little bit earlier. I've actually done a little bit of a review for PC World that will be in the next issue, I guess I've been playing with it for over a month now. Must be getting on towards sort of 6 weeks, and I found it's actually a pretty cool device, quite unique. It's definitely got its shortcomings, being a new device in a new ecosystem. There aren't millions of apps like we see on iOS and so on, it's pretty cool with the keyboard, the kickstand, really well built hardware. What are your thoughts? You had a little bit of a look at the hardware and so on too.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times when people have pulled them out and said, "Hey, look what I've got and you don't have," and I'm really impressed with the hardware. I mean, I've always been a fan of Microsoft hardware. They've always done very good with their range of keyboards, mice, I mean, even the Xbox as well. So I'm not surprised that they put out a very good hardware product, but I'm kind of surprised that it works so well as a tablet, because that's something that they've never done before. And I was not expecting something as slick as it is. And I mean, the keyboard is an absolutely beautiful touch. And I'm really impressed with what I've seen so far, but I haven't had a chance to use one for a long period of time, so I don't know how I'd feel actually using it as a tablet. But
could it replace your laptop, Paul, if you were going travelling for a few days or a week or so?
Yeah, I think it could. In the same way that there are people today that will travel with an iPad instead of a laptop. But the difference is that it actually brings you a bit closer to the functionality of what a laptop does. Some of the things are small, but having that keyboard cover is really convenient, that it's really easy to use. And when I look at the number of people now that use their iPads with, say, a Bluetooth keyboard, You know, that to me is not such a good experience as using the keyboard that comes, or one of the keyboards that you can use with the Microsoft Surface, because that keyboard is just part of your cover, so it's actually physically attached. So there's no batteries that are in the keyboard that need to be separately charged. Oh yeah, I've got to charge my iPad plus my keyboard. It's actually all attached through. It's just, you know, it's just one element. It's not a full laptop in terms of, you know, if you want to use it on your lap, you know, it's not as easy to sort of, you know, balance on one leg or, you know, hold at a strange angle and so on, because it's not one big sort of solid piece like a laptop is. But, you know, in a lot of other situations, it works really well. And because it runs Windows RT, which is a, you know, it's a cut down version of Windows, it won't run all of the apps that you run on a traditional laptop. But it does come with that home and student version of Office. So you've got Word, Excel, and PowerPoint there. You can, you know, you can work away on things. You can plug a mouse in if you want to use a mouse, which is, you know, something that I've done with it, because it sort of, you know, can work a bit better than the built-in trackpad. And I've also got it linked up. So I've tested it sort of linked up to a server at my office, so that actually I can use Outlook on it. But Outlook's not running on the Surface device directly. It looks as though it is, but it's actually sitting on a server remotely in the office that it's linked up to, using Microsoft's remote app capability. So, you know, the lines are sort of somewhat blurred there between, yeah, what it officially can do and what you actually can do, you know, if you're linking into a Microsoft sort of server environment. So, I think it's, you know, it is a really innovative product in terms of the, you know, the things that it does. When we look at the weight of it, yeah, it's I think it's 28 grams or 30 grams heavier than an iPad 4th generation. So it's a little bit heavier, but when you think about that, often with an iPad you're going to be carrying around a keyboard, a dock or something as well, which will make the iPad actually a chunk heavier, and you're dealing with a bigger screen. So yeah, for that sort of work use, I think it's really good. And yeah,
what about the battery life?
Battery life is pretty good. I haven't had too many issues.
I'll take it over your show here, by the way, asking you the question.
No, that's just fine. The battery life has been okay. One thing I have noticed, because it's it's got the sort of functionality where in the background it will go and it'll sort of wake up and check your email and those sorts of things. If you leave it for a few days, actually a bit more goes on behind the scenes than what we've had in the past with some tablets. But the convenience is as soon as you grab it to use it, as long as it, you know, you haven't left it too long so the battery's gone flat, then, you know, all your email and your other bits and pieces, you know, that sort of stuff is actually up to date, so you're not having to pull all of that stuff down. One of the things that it is missing that, you know, a lot of iPad users have got used to is the option of 3G. And so it doesn't have that option in the current models. Harley, do you use a 3G tablet, or you've gone with the Wi-Fi?
No, I've gone with the Wi-Fi only, yeah. Because I find it's so inconvenient actually maintaining two phone plans. And I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm poor. I can't afford two SIM cards. So I just tether to my phone whenever I do, and use my my huge 250 megabyte a month data plan whenever I want to access things on the go.
I see Tim chuckling in the corner there. Quietly knowing that 2 degrees can offer you a second SIM to tag onto your data plan.
Sure can. We'll talk afterwards.
Unfortunately, there's no hole in my iPad to put it in, because I was also too cheap to buy the 3G version.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do pay quite a premium for it, and I think, you know, when we look at it, the majority of tablets sold today don't include a 3G capability. You know, it is sort of the premium option, and, you know, as you say, you can tether through another device now, so it's not a necessity.
I mean, I guess the advantage of it is just obviously you're using the battery on that device rather than tethering and then draining the device you're tethering through. So, but look, there is that premium, and it's always struck me that it's a larger delta than it kind of feels like it should be, right? When you can buy a data stick for $49, why?
Well, that's right. You can go out and buy a cheap 3G cell phone for $30 or $40 as well. So, yeah, it does seem strange that you pay a big, big premium for that 3G capability in devices.
That does make me think. Saying you could buy a data stick for $49 or whatever, given the Surface will let you plug in you know, any Windows supported hardware, could you plug in a data stick to your Surface?
Well, the Surface doesn't support any Windows supported hardware because with the Windows RT uses the ARM chipset rather than a traditional Intel. Mm-hmm. So there are some devices that won't work. But my experiences with it have been pretty good. I did have a Vodafone data stick floating around, but I'm not sure where it is at the moment. So I haven't tried that particular one, but there are lots and lots of devices plugged in one of HP's new USB/wireless multifunction devices earlier, just to test out, you know, how does the Surface go with a really new new printer scanner multifunction. And I thought, this could be asking for trouble, really. You know, usually these devices come with a load of DVDs you've got to load in, and you know, can be a bit of a nightmare. And I plugged it in, and then I went into the printers and devices sort of section to have a look. And there was the printer. It turned up as my default printer. I could right click on it and choose scan. And I was able to scan straight from that multifunction straight into my device, as you would with a laptop or PC, or probably easier actually, because there's no option for a DVD or anything, and the driver just came down and automatically installed without even asking me a question. It just, you know, it just worked. It was really cool.
It sounds a lot easier than printing, setting up a printer on a PC.
Been
reviewing printers and
I think part of that's is probably the sort of Windows 8. Platform that RT is built on. Part of it is that RT devices aren't going to have CD drives and those sort of hoops. There's probably a couple of elements to it, but it worked really well. And you know, I've found, you know, most bits and pieces I've played with are pretty good. So there's definitely some extra flexibility that the Surface brings. That certainly makes it more PC-like than the traditional tablet. And yeah, for instance, I was tethering with, you know, my phone recently, and of course I was able to plug my phone actually into the USB slot on the Surface and to use its battery. So there's some conveniences there that it comes with, yeah, compared to what we've had in the past. So it's pretty cool. All right. Well, that's probably us for this episode.
One little update for me. I was coming back to you with the remarkable pricing on our 12 GB broadband zone pack, $99.
$99. Okay. Yeah, that's. I don't think anyone can complain about that. Now, there was something else that I think we might have scooted through earlier. Something we've been asking the carriers around was, what's happening with the Galaxy S3? Now, this is really one of the favourite handsets amongst our listeners and probably, tech heads and gadget followers everywhere at the moment. But we've been waiting on this update from Ice Cream Sandwich or Android 4.0 to the 4.1 update. What's happening? What's 2Degrees doing in those regards, Tim?
So, look, the good news is we have just approved the software on our side. It doesn't take us long to, I guess, sort of regression test a new build of software. So we've provided that approval to Samsung, and now we're waiting for them to queue up the upgrade process. I think there's a piece of work for them to do because obviously they're rolling it out, globally.
Yep.
I imagine it all comes off a similar set of infrastructure. And then I think they have sort of a phasing. They try not to push the whole thing out at once, day one, push it out to everybody. There's kind of a phasing they go through where I think they sort of cycle through different sort of phone hardware ranges just to try and smooth out the upgrade process. So, as soon as we get an answer, we'll let you know.
Okay. Oh, that's good that it's moved along to the next phase. And we've heard something similar from Vodafone. We haven't heard back from Telecom, but I'm hoping that for any of those listening that are in that situation, that it won't be too far off before you get your update. Do you have any idea how long these things usually take, sort of from sign off from traditional? Is it usually a couple of weeks? Or
I think a couple of weeks is probably a pretty fair estimate.
Yeah.
I think probably we're all aware of how much users of these phones want it, it's one of those phones where people just want to have a latest version as soon as it's available. So it is out there, it's coming, should be pretty soon.
All right, well, I'll ask you for a sneaky copy of it later, Tim, we'll see what you can do.
I can give you that now.
All right. Well, that's great. Hey, thanks, guys, for joining us. Now, where do we find both of you online? Harley, you're on Twitter?
Yep, you'll find me on Twitter as at Harley Oshier, if anyone can actually spell my surname.
Well, we'll put a link up on the NZ Tech Podcast site.
Yeah, that might be a little easier.
It's O-G-I-E-R, right?
You've got it right.
Okay. Of course, we can see a lot of your gadget and tech reviews and so on at pcworld.co.nz.
That's right. pcworld.co.nz. Reviews.
And in the magazine, of
and
course.
In the magazine.
What exciting bits and pieces are coming through in the next issue, which will be out...
Next issue will be out in February, as we have combined December and January each year.
Yep.
We're looking at Windows 8 all-in-one PCs in February, which I've just finished testing. It's been a rather interesting experience. So lots of touchscreens, lots of 23 and 27-inch touchscreens, which is feels very, very futuristic. Lots of people have walked into the lab while I've been testing them and you know, got this sort of Star Wars reference. I'm sitting there, hands all over the screen. So
that's cool.
It's been great fun.
Yeah. Which ones have you played with?
I've checked out the Dell XPS 127, the Samsung Series 7, because Samsung names everything Series 7 or Series 9, from TVs to computers. So the Samsung Series 7 all-in-one, an Acer and an Asus, the model numbers of which escape me, and Hewlett-Packard, the NV23. Touch Smart.
Okay.
So quite a
variety. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Almost one from everyone.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to having a look at all that. That's great. And Tim, where do we track you down online? You've got a Twitter handle there?
Yeah, I do have one, but you know, it's not I think if you look back at the history of it, it's not terribly productive output. But it is there at Timmy Hay.
Good. So people can send you tweets and you'll give them all sorts of secrets about when the next firmware updates and so on are coming out?
I'll release what I can, mate. You know, I'll fly close to the wind.
There's an official 2 degrees handle, right, where on Twitter, where they're pretty good at responding on general queries, right?
At 2 degrees mobile.
Okay.
Yep. So cool. Paul O'Brien runs that and does a great job.
Yep. Excellent. Anywhere else we should look out online for?
Oh no, that's me, mate.
Excellent. All right. Hey, well, thanks both of you for coming in and joining us on episode 102. We'll look forward to having you guys back on another occasion. That's us for this week. Thanks everyone for listening in. See ya.